We have the mitzvah ba'asu l'mikdash. The Medrash has a very beautiful mashal to describe this mitzvah ba'asu l'mikdash. The lashon of the Medrash is mashal l'melech shehoisa le'bas yichida, a king that had an only daughter, v'niseis, and she got married. Amar la, he said to the son-in-law, biti shenasati l'cha yichidihi, this daughter that I just gave to you, she's my only daughter. Lifrish mimena ini yachal, I can't separate myself from her. Laimachal titla ini yachal, I can't tell you not to take her. Sharei ishtachahi, because she's your wife. So it's describing the father's dilemma, his struggle. So elazay teva aseli, I ask you for one favor. Shekol makom shata haylech, wherever you go, kitein echad aseli she'ad reslachem. Make me a small apartment that I could stay with you wherever you go. You can travel wherever you want. Wherever you go, we should have a small room for me on the side. Kach amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael Soto Kadosh Baruch Hu, said to Chal Yisrael, Nasati lechem es ha-Torah. I gave you the Torah, that's the previous parashiyos. I gave you the Torah, that's like my beloved daughter. Lifrish hamena eini yachal. I can't pull myself away from the Torah. Leim lechem al titlua eini yachal. I'm not going to tell you not to take it. So what do I want? B'chamakav shatam ha-yichem b'yizachar asuli. Wherever you go, you should make me a house. And that's, the Medrash says, that's our perspective. That's how we should understand the mitzvah of Asuli Mikdash. So what's the mashal supposed to convey? So the Chiddush HaRim asks Akashi, he says, what's the pshat in this Medrash? One thing's for sure, it's definitely not marriage advice. In real life, it's probably not a good idea for the in-laws to say, not that we want to mix ourselves in, just let us live with you wherever you go. Just have an apartment for us. It's probably not a good idea. So it's not giving marriage advice, real life marriage advice. What is it telling us? Zakhar Chadushi Arim, that the message of this medrash really is that if a person wants to be zeichet to v'asul imikdash v'shachanti b'seicham, meaning that he has a shaykhis with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, that there's a real kesher, a real, let's call it a real frumkeit. He wants to really be frum, be an erlich yid with a, not just going through the motions, but with a pnimius to it, with a connection with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, then the only way is if he's married to the Torah. To the extent, meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're married to the Torah, I can't take her away from you, so I'm going to come live with you. To the extent that a person feels like the Torah is his wife, that he's in an intimate relationship with the Torah, with Limud HaTorah, with Esek HaTorah, then he's Zeichet V'Shachanti B'Seicham. But if a person has a very casual relationship with the Torah, then he's not going to have a Shachanti B'Seicham. Meaning to say, even if he's serious about other parts of Yiddishkeit, about the mitzvahs, some of the mitzvahs, about the Amim Tovim, but if he has only a casual relationship with Esek HaTorah and doesn't mean to make it into a marriage, then the Shachanti B'Seicham is going to be out of reach for him. Explain what that means a little more. The Medrash says, the Rambam brings down a Medrash, that if you look through the Pesukim in Parashas Truma, so it says va'asu, it says va'asisa shulchan, it says va'asisa menorah, but it says va'asisa krash or krashim tasu. All the other parts, the kelim that were made, are said b'lashin v'asisa, and you singular, talking to Moshe Bitzalel, an individual. But when it comes to the arayin, it says v'asu arayin. It's singled out. The arayin is the only one that's written b'lashin rabim. Now, who made the arayin v'asu, and they shall make? Everything else is and you singular v'asisa, and you shall make or taseh. But when it comes to the arayin, it's v'asu arayin. So the lashon of the medrash is because the arayin everyone had to make together. Now the Ramban brings down this medrash. The Ramban says, I don't really know what it means. Everyone had to make it together. Everyone, I mean, it's one piece of, you know, one piece of gold, one gold ornament. You can't really have 600,000 craftsmen that are all, you know, there's an expression, too many chefs. How does it go? You can't have too many chefs in the kitchen, or too many chefs spoil the broth, or something. Maybe I'm mixing up my expressions. But it's no good to have too many chefs, right? No good to have too many craftsmen. You can't have 600,000 people taking a part in making the arayin. So the Ramban says, you know, I'm not sure what it means. He says, maybe it means that as many people as possible came in and did a little bit. You know, maybe it's a little bit similar to, like, if you've ever been to a Hachnasa Sefer Torah, when somebody donates a Sefer Torah, so at the end of the Sefer Torah, they leave over a few ICs, and then people, friends, relatives come in at the end of the Torah, and each person writes one letter, or sits next to the Sefer for a photo op while he makes believe that he writes one letter, or whatever we call it, the Ksivas, so ICs. But maybe they left over like a little bit for as many people as possible to come and give one bang with the hammer. Maybe, he says, or maybe in the donations, everyone gave a tiny little bit of gold besides for the general donations that went into the general fund, and they collected gold for lots of things in the Mishkan. But everyone gave one earring, one link from a necklace to put into a special box that was the gold for the Aron, so everyone should have a share. It's still not so practical, 600,000 little pieces of gold that were brought together. Maybe, says the Ramban, so maybe it was pure, this participation was purely mental, that everyone was mechavein, that I mean to be, to have a share, and that was enough. So the Ramban says, practically, I don't know what the Medrash means, that everyone had a share. But philosophically, what the Medrash is telling us is that all the other parts of the Mishkan, you could have somebody else representing you. The Shulchan, the Menorah, the Mizbechais, one person could do it, another, and it works for you. The Aron, which, what was the Aron, right? The Luchais, the Torah, right? The Aron is the receptacle of the Torah. You can't have other people do it for you. Everyone needs to participate in the Torah. Each Yachid, it's not like, you know, I think a lot of people have the musug that, let's say, you know, one day you'll be part of a congregation, of a shul, and there's the rabbi of the shul. So I think a lot of Americans have the notion that that's like a different, he has a different function, a different purpose in life. His job is to know Torah and teach it. And our job, you know, we have a lot of different people in the shul. You know, you have the accountants, the doctors, the lawyers, the Indian chiefs, people in a lot of different walks of life. And if you choose to be a rabbi, then it's your job to know a lot of Torah and to teach it. And of course, in other religions, it is like that. In other religions, there are special laws that apply only to the clergy. And in Yiddishkeit, there's no such thing. The way to look at the rav of the shul and his congregation is really more, I think, like, when you have a lot of people in a class, there's a biology class, right? And there's a test coming up. Now, not everybody is equally well prepared for the test. You know, some people are just more gifted at it. Right? They're just smarter. Some people have more of an interest in it, so it comes more easily to them. Some people have more time to expend on it. And so when it comes before the test, there are some people that know it very well and are for sure going to get 100, and some people that are really struggling. And it would be nice at that point if the people that know more would help out the people that know less. But they're all responsible for the same material. They're not all equal. We can't make believe that everyone in the class is equal, and some know more and some know less, and those that know more should help those that know less. But they're all responsible for the same material. That's Rabbanim and Balabatim in Kal Yisrael. We're all responsible for the same material. The Torah is for each individual. Everybody needs to be a Talmud Chacham. Now, not everybody could be a Talmud Chacham. Obviously not on the same Madrega. Some people are more gifted, and some people have had more gifts given to them in their upbringing that make them more capable of it. But each individual is achray that, to the extent that he's able, he has to have his own personal kesher with Limud HaTorah. And you know, not that there's, you know, is there no role, is there no place for amaratzim in Klal Yisrael? Of course there is. You know, if somebody who has no Torah, doesn't know how to learn, he comes to shul, we're very kind to him. We're very nice. We want to make him feel comfortable. We want to make him feel at home. But you know what? The same thing is true economically. There's such a thing as a safety net. Somebody that, you know, there's Tom Cheshavis, there's welfare. There are people that never can't make it. So we don't say, you know, we don't snub our nose at them and say, oh, you're so poor. We don't want to have anything to do with the poor people. We try to help the poor people, of course. But, you know, when you're starting out, when you're going to school, when you're going to college, you don't say, well, you know, what's my career plans? Look, there's always welfare, so I could do that. You don't want to be in that situation. There's, you know, we'll be kind to those people, but you don't want to be one of them. So, you know, that's our kesher with Limud HaTorah also. You're expected, where each Yid is expected to make himself into something. And if somebody can't, if somebody doesn't, Nebuch he doesn't, Nebuch he didn't. But you don't want to be a Nebuch. There's a Maisa that, I don't know if it's a true story. I don't really have any reason to doubt it. Just I've heard it a bunch of times, each time a little bit different. So that makes me a little bit suspicious. But it could be true. The truth is it sounds kind of characteristic. Here's how the story goes. You can take it or leave it. A Yid came to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Yid in Bnei Brak. You know, Bnei Brak is a city with a very high poverty rate. But this was a Yid that really made it financially. He had a successful business, and he had a lot of money, and he was able to afford more things than his neighbors were able to afford. And he wanted to buy a luxury car. Not so many people in Bnei Brak have a car. Altogether, he wanted to buy a Lexus. That's the way I heard the story. I think a different time I heard it was an Infiniti. I don't know if they sell either of them in Eretz Yisrael, but you can make it up. You can make it up as well as I can. Okay, he wanted to buy a Lexus. But he was worried that maybe it's pasha, not nice. People on the block, there are people that you know, they can't afford, you know. And maybe it's not right, it's going to make people jealous. Maybe he was concerned about ayin hara, I don't remember exactly. He went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, the story goes, and he told him his dilemma. Baruch Hashem, the Baruch Shalom was good to me, I have a lot of money, I'm able to afford a Lexus, but I'm afraid it's going to make people jealous, maybe it's not the right thing. Reb Chaim said, how well do you know Shas? So he said, not so well, but I'm asking about a car. I was explaining to the Rav that I have a lot of money and I could buy a Lexus. A Lexus is a nice car. And Reb Chaim interrupts him and he says, Nashim Nezikin, backwards and forwards. And the person said, no, I'm sorry, the Rav doesn't understand. I'm trying to ask whether it's okay to buy a fancy car. He said, is there one mesechta that everybody in your block knows that if they have a shayla, they'll come to you and ask? So he said, no, not really. So Reb Chaim put a hand on his arm and he said, Reb Yid, I'm nothing to worry about. There's nobody in this town that will be jealous of you. So Reb Chaim told him. Now, it could be that Reb Chaim was a little bit overly naive about, you know, maybe a little too idealistic, I should say, about what all the Yidden in the Neibrak, you know, do all the Yidden have their head on as straight as he does? Probably not, even in the Neibrak. But he was telling him something about what a Yid that has his head on straight understands about upper class, lower class. What does it mean to be a somebody, to accomplish something, to be a hush of a Yid? And it requires a connection, a lifelong connection with Torah, with Eisek HaTorah, with real Limud HaTorah, not through others, not through, you know, going to an occasional lecture on a Torah topic, but really holding and learning. And, you know, I'm speaking about this because I mean to say halacha lemaisa, that you know, when you talk about being married to the Torah, the mashal in the Medrash at the beginning of this week's parasha. So that means that if there's a time that's set aside, that's meant to be a time for Eisek HaTorah, if a person makes up that they're going to spend a certain time, you know, going to go out to lunch with their wife, they can't, you know, put their wife on hold for the whole hour of lunch and not be there. If there's a Seder in Yeshiva, So we have to be machshav the Seder. We have to participate in the Seder. You know, I heard recently Rav David Soloveitchik was nifter a couple of weeks ago. So I heard somebody saying over that back in the 60s when there were all the Haredim in Yerushalayim were making these big hafkanot against the construction of a highway that was going through from neighbors in Yerushalayim, he said to his oilam, to his baruchim, he said, over there they're being mafkin against the Mechalei Shabbos, they should be mafkin here, right outside of our Beis Medrash. That there are bachim over here that Seder starts at 9 o'clock and 9:15 they walk into the Beis Medrash. From 9 o'clock, these Yidden, the Yidden here in this Beis Medrash, he was talking to his Talmidim, the Yidden here in this Beis Medrash, you know about the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know what happened at Har Sinai, and you go put God on hold for 15 minutes when it's the beginning of Seder? Now, we don't make such demands here in land. Nobody's coming after you and saying, how dare you 15 minutes late to Seder? You know, but the emes is, from your perspective, you should wish that we were holding by that. You should, because avada, we'd be better off if we could. Okay, but we're not, you know, kalacha lefi madrigasai. We're not holding by that demand, but each one of us has to understand that that if there's a Seder, you know, it's a few hours in the morning, the amount of time, we're flexible, the amount of time that's realistic for you, that's doable for you, but a person has to recognize that spending his time learning, I mean, if you're not doing it in yeshiva, you're never going to do it. And then what's going to be with you? Welfare, homelessness, you know, in the mashal. You don't want to set yourself up for that. You have to devote your time to learning when it's the learning time in yeshiva. Put in a strong seder. Grow as a talmid chacham. Grow as a masmid. Grow into a real, you know, what we call an upper class yid of a shachanti b'seicham. Okay.
8 years.
Welcome.